Welcome back into Bet on Chicago here on WLS 890 AM. I'm your host, Mike Palm. You can follow me on X/Twitter at Mike Palm Circa. And this past week, we had the draft, maybe not the draft everyone's anticipating next Thursday in the NFL, but we had the WNBA draft. And you know, I thought that obviously the outcome that Paige Bueckers was going to be the number one draft pick was known. But what's interesting is how the market reacted to the draft picks. And of course, the Chicago Sky had two picks in the first round and selected Asha Sivka from Slovenia, and then one of the more famous players in college basketball the last few years, Haley Van Lith, who of course is famous for her matchups with Caitlin Clark in the NCAA tournament. She finished her final year down in Fort Worth at TCU and had just a terrific season there, led them to their first ever Elite Eight appearance. So when we take a look at the landscape of the WNBA, you know, you look at your finalists from last year, the New York Liberty, who in the maximum five games beat the Minnesota Lynx. Many people have said it was stolen from the Lynx. Obviously, Liberty were down big at home in the final game, I believe down 16 or 17, came back, but still down five in the last minute. Maybe there was a travel against Breonna Stewart that wasn't called at the last foul, questionable. And she hit one free throw, sent it to overtime, and they won it. Of course, Cheryl Reeve, the coach of the Lynx and also the coach of USA Basketball, the Olympic team, said it was stolen from us. So those are your two finalists last year, the two-time defending champions that didn't make it to the final, the Las Vegas Aces, who were knocked out by the Liberty in the second round, of course, amongst the candidates of who would be favored this year, and then the Indiana Fever, who rose from having the first pick in the draft two consecutive years by worst record to being a playoff team last year. Of course, they were eliminated by the Connecticut Sun. Interesting situation from both a business and sports perspective with the Connecticut Sun. That's a team that took Minnesota to the maximum five games in the semifinals and yet returned none of their starters and their head coach, Stephanie White, made the move to take over with the Indiana Fever and to coach Caitlin Clark. Of course, she called a lot of Caitlin Clark's games working for the Big Ten Network between her time coaching when she was a color commentator. So as we open the odds for the WNBA post-draft, the favorite are your defending champs, the New York Liberty. But then the next three teams are very close in odds. So 2-1 on the Liberty. Your second choice is the Aces at plus 325, the Lynx at plus 350, and the Fever at plus $4. I did have the Lynx 5-1 last year, and they couldn't get it done in that heartbreaking final. Now, the Dallas Wings, who had the worst record in the WNBA, got Paige Bueckers, and their odds are 85-1, which are not the worst. The Valkyries in Northern California are at 200-1. The Connecticut Sun, who lost all five starters, and the Washington Mystics are at 150-1. The Atlanta Dream are at 55-1, going in reverse order here. And the Chicago Sky at 85-1. So certainly a lot of interest generated amongst the Sky last year. Angel Reese, obviously a lightning rod for controversy, also has talked about sitting out if they don't get a pay increase. Obviously, the contract, the collective bargain contract, goes through this season. It ends at the end of this year, and then they'll have to renegotiate. Remember, last year was the first time that these ladies didn't have to fly chartered, that they got to go on private jets. And with the Caitlin Clark effect, the ratings went up almost 400% and attendance across the league up 40%. So interesting here, we have our first look at the WNBA championship odds post-draft. And the Chicago Sky come in at 85 to 1. Sky Backers, that's a nice price. Head on down to Circus Sports and put your money down. This is Bet on Chicago, WLS, 890 AM. Welcome back in to Bet on Chicago here on WLS 890 AM. And as promised, the first guest of our second hour is Jonathan Von Tobel. He is the NBA expert at VSiN, but so good betting many other things. And John, since we're now less than a week away from the NBA draft, and it is certainly a source of interest and a hobby for some, a nightmare for bookmakers, I wanted to get your thoughts on how you were attacking, if at all, this year's draft.
Yeah, there's a couple things. I haven't bet much yet. I'll probably add a few things as we get closer. Obviously, out in Las Vegas, too, there's a limited amount of offerings until recent days. So that's also part of the reason why I haven't really done too much with it. But the one thing that I will be betting, I'm just waiting to see what the market's going to do with the price. I do bet under the quarterbacks in the first round every single year. It's one of the things I like to do. For your audience, since we've had draft betting here in Las Vegas, so this is going to be the ninth year. It is 6-2 to the under for quarterbacks drafted in the first round. It's something that I think we tend to overrate when it comes to the guys that go every single year. It's, hey, you know, this second round, third round guy could sneak back into the first round, right? Extra year of control, trade back in, all sorts of things. And I think that tends to get overblown when you're talking about the draft itself and when these guys are going to go. I mean, for crying out loud, Jalen Milroe has been invited to the NFL draft. Todd McShay had a great report where he's talked to several teams who are genuinely confused, was the quote, as to why he would accept an invite to the draft. There are very many reports that Shador is very much slipping or has slid out of the first round. And maybe even Jackson Dart goes ahead of him and Shador slips to the second. But Mike, I keep going back to the Kenny Pickett draft, right? Where that number was 3.5 for quarterbacks in the first round. Kenny Pickett's the only guy that goes. And there were rumors that Malik Willis was going to go number one that year. And ultimately, it doesn't happen. So we tend to do too much with that. And I'll continue to play this every year until it starts to creep back to even. But under quarterbacks, under 2.5 quarterbacks in the first round. And then reading some of the intel and looking around, I'm interested. They're starting to get some rumblings here that the offensive tackle out of Mizzou could actually end up being Armon Membu, the first offensive lineman taken. You know, a lot of people have the kid from LSU being slated in to be the fourth overall selection for the New England Patriots, but maybe Membu can fight his way back up there. You know, I think offensive line, much like wide receiver, is somewhat personal. You know, you look at a guy and you see, okay, what does he do well? What do we like? What do we like to do? Maybe this guy fits a little bit better. I think you guys at Circa hung up Membu 6.5 under plus 280. I think grabbing a plus price like that, very much something worth looking at too. Looking around at some other positions as well, including where Tyler Warren's going to go. But those two for sure on my list.
Yeah, he's one of the, and we hung, I think, 17 or 18 guys. He's one of the three that hasn't moved at all since we hung it yesterday afternoon.
Yeah.
Over 6.5 minus 140 plus 280 to the under. All right, let's talk a little early season baseball. Most teams have played 18, 19, 20 games so far. Biggest surprise for you?
I think so far in the early going, the biggest surprise is actually San Francisco. Like, I thought that they were going to be fine, but I actually didn't think that they were going to be this legitimately good. Now, they are playing a little bit closer to 500 baseball. They didn't lose the series. They split the series with Philadelphia out there on the road. They're in the midst of a tough East Coast trip, but they did take 2 out of 3 from the Yankees, and they continue to impress me. And I do think that they have some legitimate pitching. Like, Verlander still hasn't really gotten it together, but some of the underlying metrics would tell you that he's going to be fine in the long term. There's some other guys in the roster, or excuse me, on the rotation, I think, worry you, but I think the Giants have some legitimate staying power when you're talking about where they can be in a race for the National League and a wild card spot. And I also think, I think that they were going to be good, but I'll stay in the division. I actually think the Padres can be like on point with the Los Angeles Dodgers. They're legitimately great. I think their lineup is fantastic. I really like their pitching. I really do think that their bullpen is one of the best in Major League Baseball. And I don't know why the Padres would not be considered a title contender right there with the Los Angeles Dodgers. I think they can go toe to toe with them.
Yeah, I bet a trifecta in the NL West. I bet Dodgers over Arizona over Padres. I'm in trouble with that ticket. I mean, I think Arizona's still there, but I'm with you. This Padres legitimate. They're getting really good starts out of all these secondary guys. We haven't even seen Darvish yet, and the bullpen is maybe the best in baseball with the depth of it. I mean, you can go 6-9, and what they did, they gave up one earned run through, 12 games, and they're 12-1 at home. So
yep.
My biggest surprise is that I thought the AL Central would be very competitive. And so I took a shot with KC because they were the best price of the four that I thought And I know Adam Burke, who wrote our guide at VSiN, was against KC. I think the Tigers are going to run away and hide with this AL Central. I think you got a bunch of 500 teams and you got the Tigers who are playing how they did in September and October last year. You know, Torkelson is finally starting to hit the ball out, and I'm a big fan of Reese Olson, and they've got a top manager in Hinch. And I just think I think when we come to the All-Star break, the Tigers are going to have a lot of distance between them and the field.
Yep, I would agree. I think one of the things, too, we talked about this on Follow the Money yesterday. This is why I like these metrics and these underlying numbers to give you a better idea of how guys are performing. Reese Olson was one of those guys who was like, no, like you can actually kind of trust him. He's actually pitched pretty well. And then he faces that Royals lineup, which I think now is, I think, like 27th away to runs created plus. Like they've been awful in terms of their offense. They really don't have any depth to that lineup, it would seem. And then you have guys, too, in that lineup. Like we're still waiting for Pasquantino to wake up. He has not been very good for them either. So I would agree with you. Like, watch them a little bit more. I haven't seen a ton of the Guardians outside of their series where they went to Anaheim last week against the Angels. But looking at their pitching staff, there's a lot of red flags in that pitching staff for the Guardians, which is weird because I thought, like, you know, a couple years ago, you're like, this might be one of the better ones in baseball. And that's not really the case. So I do think the Tigers do have that. And you have guys like Torque who are really starting to turn things around and take really legitimate steps forward. I would totally agree.
All right, let's switch over to the NBA. This is your area of expertise, and we're about to embark on the first round of the playoffs. We still have, as we talk on Good Friday morning, the two play-in games to determine who will play the one seeds, but we do know six of the first round matchups. Let's take a high-level question first. We know that the postseason is different than the regular season. So how do you adjust your ratings or your metrics to account for the different style of play in the postseason, or are there certain metrics you look at more for the postseason?
So I will be quite honest, as a metrics guy, and I really do enjoy them and really think that they tell a story, to an extent, I think you throw them out, because I think in the NBA postseason, more than so many other postseasons, this is about the matchups, the X's and O's. This is how teams are going to attack each other's weaknesses. And you go back and you watch the way these teams play. And I'll give you a great example is, so the NBA Finals last year is one of those where I cleaned up. It was one of the better finals runs that I've had, but only because you went back and you watched those matchups between the Celtics and the Mavericks. They only played two. They told you exactly how it was going to go when they played one another. That was a team that was going to attack a squad that was playing centers who couldn't go out on the perimeter. It was a team in the Dallas Mavericks who had a bunch of shooters who couldn't hit from beyond the arc, especially from the top of the key. And that was a Celtics team that exacerbated those weaknesses, went after them, and really it played out on the floor. So that didn't really have – there's metrics involved, right? There's three-point shooting, things like that. But I think it's very much how these teams are going to attack each other's weaknesses and go after that. Because in the NBA, in the postseason, it's all about mismatch hunting. It's really what they always do. You know, in the Knicks series, for example, Jalen Brunson's going to work. Cade Cunningham's going to go after him a ton. And so people might say, oh, well, they have OG Anunoby and they have Mikal Bridges to defend Cade Cunningham. The Pistons are going to make sure that when Cade Cunningham's driving to the basket, it is going to be Jalen Brunson on him. So like little things like that, I think, don't really show up in some of the metrics. And it's really about film watching and breaking down how some of these teams are going to pick at that scab the other way. And I think that really makes the big difference.
The most tightly lined series is the 4-5 matchup in the West, which opened with the Nuggets favored. And now it's totally flipped to the Clippers being favored. And you are a Clippers fan. Break down that series for me.
So I have a small bet on the Clippers at +130 to win the series, one of the first bets I made. So I'm sitting on a good number. We'll see if that comes to fruition. It obviously starts with Jokic. Jokic is the best player on the floor, and how he plays is going to determine this. But I think, you know, we talked to Chad Andrews out in Colorado about this, and I'm kind of nerding out because I think the big important matchup is going to be Ivica Zubac versus Nikola Jokic. Statistically, Zubac has been the best defender among centers against Nikola Jokic. Now, he is still great, so it doesn't really matter too much, but statistically, he has been the best. But what I think is important is on the other end of the floor. The Clippers will use Zubac on offense, which is somewhat of a difference between the other centers that that Nikola Jokic has faced. Jokic is going to get post up by Zubac. He is going to get brought out to high pick and rolls, and he's going to have to defend. He's going to have to work on both ends of the floor, and this has been a very subpar defensive year for Nikola Jokic. And so having him have to work on both ends, trying to make him work and exacerbate that gas tank, I think is going to be a very big thing that works in the favor of the Clippers. Should also know that Zubac is one of the best bigs in terms of staying on the floor. He should be able to stay out there against Jokic. So I think that's a matchup that can work for the Clippers as much as it can against the best player in the world. The other part of this is I think Jamal Murray is going to have his hands full on offense. You have Chris Dunn, who is a legitimately great defender who can clamp him down if they need to be. They can have a Kawhi Leonard who can stay in front of him if they need to. The Nuggets have no answers for Kawhi Leonard. And the bench pieces, I think, are a little bit better, too, for what the Clippers bring out there. You know, Bogdanovich has been playing very well. You have Ben Simmons, who can at least run the offense for them, get them out in transition, run, serve as a little mini point guard when guys are off the floor. I think that this Clippers team is better coached. I think they are better on offense, and they are quite better on defense. And I think those things are going to make a difference here, and I think they're going to win this thing in six.
How much do narratives play a role in your handicapping? In other words, will Kawhi stay healthy? Yep. Is Harden going to disappear in the big moments in the playoffs, especially if it gets to a game seven? Does that factor into your betting?
So I think it doesn't, but it's a weird way to put it. Like, when I put the Clippers plus 130 bet in, there are some nerves because, like I keep saying, if you or anybody else has some trepidation about this Clipper squad, it is totally understandable because Kawhi has not finished a postseason series since 2021. That has been a very big problem for them. Now, the plus side is that they have, when Kawhi has been healthy, they have only been eliminated once in a postseason series. That was the bubble against this Nuggets team when they were up 3-1 in that series. But they have won the other series in which he has been healthy. He just has not been healthy and available in those. So I think that makes some sense. The Harden stuff, I think, is a little bit different. As I told Patrick and Dustin yesterday, the only thing I can do is accept this team as constructed, is the way I put it. And the way that this team is constructed right now, they have won, I think it's like 21 of like 23 games. They have been incredible. They are a top three team in terms of net rating. Why would I look at, hey, Harden was pretty bad in that 176ers series that one time and say, nope, I can't do this, when the reality is, over the course of a growing sample size, this is one of the best teams in the NBA.
The Rockets earned a 2 seed in the West, but continue to really have no respect, not only in the future markets, but now the Warriors are $1.80 favorite as the 7th seed. Is that series priced correctly?
I don't think so. My guess was minus 130 in favor of Golden State. So I think that there's some value here in Houston. I have a small bet on them to win this series as well. I just think that, look at the last few games we've seen the Golden State Warriors play, because they're going to run into this problem with Houston. Avicii Zubac on that Sunday, when everybody was watching the Masters, grabbed about 18 rebounds. The Clippers doubled them up on the glass. They generated a bunch of second chance opportunities. The Grizzlies rebounded 40.9% of their missed shot attempts against them. So again, generating a massive amount of second chance opportunities. Zach Edey had 17 rebounds in that game. They are going to have a lot of trouble keeping Houston off the glass. The Rockets have Alperen Şengün. They have Steven Adams. Actually, Ime Udoka has been playing some lineups, Mike, where he has played both of those two together at times. So you're talking about 2 7-footers out there against a front court of Draymond Green and Jimmy Butler, who are going to be giving up a ton of size and weight to both of those guys. I think that this is one where you walk into almost every single matchup knowing, if you're the Warriors, we are probably losing the possession battle. We are not going to have as many possessions as our opponent, so we have to be near perfect with our other possessions in order to have a chance. Now, you have Jimmy Butler, you have Steph Curry, you're going to be able to do that more often than not, but I think that this is one where this is going to be a slog for this team in terms of being able to get rebounds, being able to keep them off of the glass, and you do have Amen Thompson. Amen Thompson did a very good job against Steph Curry 2 Sundays ago when they played, held them to 3 points on 1-10 shooting. I think a little bit had to do with the situation. It was a tough spot for Golden State, but Thompson can keep up with Curry, and not many teams boast that. I think it's going to be a hard-fought series. I think the Rockets have a very good chance of winning this, much more than what the market says.
So let's take that forward and talk about this quadrant, the 2-3 quadrant. Between Rockets, Warriors, Lakers, and T-Wolves, who do you expect to emerge to the Western Conference Finals?
So I think it's probably, it is most probable in terms of Western Conference Finals. If Golden State gets by Houston, then I think that they can make the Western Conference Finals, because I think they do match up relatively well with a team like the Los Angeles Lakers. You know, the Lakers, as I keep putting it, they boast unique size, where they actually don't have a ton of center size, but they do play like 4 power forwards and they're athletic power forwards. And there's not many guys, many teams who can really handle that sort of athleticism and size. But Golden State can, right? You have Jimmy Butler and Draymond Green to match up with Luka Doncic and with LeBron James. You've got enough pieces there. And the Lakers don't have somebody to hound a Steph Curry. So I think that matchup works out well for them. As I mentioned, I still think the Warriors should be favored over Houston. I just think the Rockets have a higher probability of winning the series than the market says. So I still think it's fair to say that the Warriors move on. As far as the other series is concerned, I'm in a somewhat similar boat, where I think the market's a little too high on the Lakers. I think that, you know, pricing this in the range of $2 is a little too much. I think the Lakers still deserve to be favored, but I thought more like minus 150, minus 145. The Lakers can do things to really bother Minnesota. You know, I keep going back to, if you remember the last time Rudy Gobert was on the Utah Jazz, the reason why that thing fell apart was because they played teams that played five out and they were just dribble driving and destroying guys while Rudy Gobert had to be camped in the corner because he had to defend his guy. He had to respect the shooter. And I think the Lakers can do that here to the Minnesota Timberwolves. And over the course of a hard-fought seven-game series, I think they come out on top more often than not. So I do think that we are going to get a Lakers-Warriors conference semifinals. I just think that it's going to be a little bit harder to get there than most believe. And I think that if we get that, the Warriors make it to the Western Conference Finals.
Jonathan, we got about 45 seconds. If one of our listeners here in Chicago doesn't have a bet on the NBA title and they want to bet $100 so that they had a sweat for the next couple of weeks or months, who would you advise they put the $100 on?
It wouldn't be much of a payout, but I would say the Boston Celtics. I think they're around 2-1 or so to win this thing. Look, they have a relatively easy path. They should sweep Orlando. They are built to beat the Knicks, and they are going to obviously be favored over the Cleveland Cavaliers should they meet them, even if it is on the road for them. I really believe in this team, and I think that that's going to be something worth investing in, especially in an Eastern Conference that doesn't have that much depth to it.
Jonathan, thanks for your time. We'll check in again with you in a couple weeks as we get down towards those conference finals for your great betting insight. I've invested in a few series. I've got T-Wolves and Clippers, so let's hope to have some fun and make some money.
Let's do it. All right,
when we return and bet on Chicago, I'll give you my plays for the NBA playoffs as well as a couple futures. WLS 890 AM.